You are listening to The Vitals, a bi-monthly podcast for all things oncology nursing. For even more content, check out oncologynursingnews.com or find Oncology Nursing News on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Hi everyone, this is Lindsay Fisher, Associate Editor at Oncology Nursing News. For this episode, we sat down with Krista Rubin, a nurse practitioner at Massachusetts General Hospital with over 20 years of experience caring for patients with melanoma, as well as the chair for the Melanoma Nursing Initiative. Ms. Rubin discusses best nursing practices in caring for patients with uveal melanoma who are receiving tebentafusp, which was approved in January of 2022.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
So I'm a nurse practitioner in the Center for Melanoma at Mass General, but I really see patients with all advanced cutaneous cancers. In the non-melanoma skin cancer arena, we're using a lot of immunotherapies as well as, you know, advanced squamous cell carcinoma, advanced basal cell. So we see all our sorts of those patients as well as metastatic Merkel cell cancer. But our main focus is on advanced melanoma. So that's kind of what I've been specializing in for the last 25 years or so.
Thank you. Yeah. And once again, thank you so much for joining us today. To jump right into our discussion, could you provide some context for uveal melanoma? How common is it, and how often do you see it in your practice?
In general, uveal melanoma is rare. It's extremely rare. It's very different than cutaneous melanoma, but some of the treatments that we have traditionally used can be effective. We happen to see a lot of patients because we have Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary next door to us, and then we have a collaboration for patients with ocular melanoma. It's often diagnosed on either routine eye exam. So a patient goes in for a routine eye exam and something is noticed like a birthmark or some pigment in the eye. The other population of patients that get diagnosed may have had an eye symptom like blurry vision or some kind of eye issue that sends them to the eye doctor and they are diagnosed with a melanoma of the eye. The reason you can have melanomas in the eye is because in utero, as our bodies are developing, there are melanocytes within the neural crest tissue. And we as humans develop from the head down. There are melanocytes in the neural crest. And generally, as the fetus is developing, those melanocytes move to places that they are normally found, like skin. But melanocytes can kind of hang out in those areas and not migrate. And so anywhere there's melanocytes, which if you're going to get a cancer of melanocytes, it's melanoma. So there are melanocytes that can be in the eye. And so if they are there and cancer develops, that's a reason why you can have melanoma of the eye. You can also have melanoma of mucosal surfaces, like in women, the vagina, anorectal, mucosal. So we think of uveal as a subtype of melanoma because it's affected by the melanocytes. But this is a diagnosis that, unlike other cancers, with time, the risk of relapse decreases. With uveal melanoma, that is not the case. So somebody's risk, if you have a high risk uveal melanoma, your risk at 1 year can be the same as your risk at 25 years, which is very unfortunate. But there have been advances in this area as well, genetic advances where we have been able to identify genetic mutations that are seen commonly in uveal melanoma. There is now a new treatment available for uveal melanoma in a patient population that is HLA-A2 positive. And what that means is we all have different HLA types. It's kind of like blood types. It either is or it isn't. And so if an individual is found to have an HLA subtype of A2, positive, then they would be eligible for the newer therapies. Without that HLA typing, the drug isn't effective. So one of the things that we do when we have a patient that's been identified as having uveal melanoma, if they are referred to medical oncology, we will test them for their HLA type. And if they are A2 positive or A2010 positive, then they are potentially eligible for the newest treatment, which is a drug called tebentafusp.
Thank you so much for providing that context. And you sort of lead me into my next question, which is, could we briefly discuss the approval of tebentafusp for this patient population? For listeners at home, this approval was supported by findings from the Phase 3 IMC GP100-202 trial, and this trial demonstrated that patients who received this drug achieved significantly improved overall survival at 1 year of follow-up compared with investigators' choice of therapy. Overall, 378 patients in this population were randomized 2-to-1 to receive either the experimental agent or investigator's choice, and at a 6-month follow-up, progression-free survival was also significantly higher in the tebentafusp group than in the control group. The 6-month progression-free survival rate was 31% versus 19% respectively. So my question to you is, can you explain a little bit about how this drug works and whether or not you've seen it in your own practice?
So this is a new type, a new in-class drug. It's a bispecific antibody that works in two ways, kind of attaching to two different components. And it's really quite fascinating. It was recently FDA approved. We have used this many times in this particular patient population, again, only A2 positive. So this bispecific fusion protein. So the drug it's an intravenous, and it's given in our outpatient clinic. However, patients are admitted to the hospital overnight. Some institutions may have an outpatient clinic that's open overnight, and those patients may be seen there. In our institution, our infusion center is not open 24 hours. So our patients will get their treatment in the outpatient setting, and then they get admitted overnight for observation. And the reason for that is one of the greatest side effects of this drug is something called cytokine release syndrome, or CRS. And what that means is that after this drug is given, you can have this incredible release or storm of cytokines. And cytokines are a component of the immune system that are activated when we have a flu or a cold, when we feel awful. So when we have a flu, we feel awful because cytokines have been released in an effort to deal with whatever virus or bacteria that we are fighting. So when cytokines are doing their thing after receiving this drug, patients are at risk for things like hypotension, hypoxia, and different effects like that. So they get admitted to the hospital for observation overnight. In worst case scenario, if there was a serious case of CRS, then similar to how the CAR-T patients are handled, these patients would get medications, specifically tocilizumab, to minimize the effects of that.
Wonderful. Thank you. And what does the safety profile look like with this agent?
Generally, patients do well. Some patients will have mild, relatively predictable side effects, things like rigors, chills, fevers. So we just support them with, acetaminophen, meperidine for rigors, may need a little oxygen, they get fluid, that type of thing.
Okay. Yeah. And can you talk a bit about the step-up dosing with this drug? How can nurses help patients get accustomed and learn how to sort of anticipate and manage potential adverse events?
The way these drugs are given, it's a dose escalation. So the first week they get 20 micrograms. Drug is given weekly. So if they do well, then they come back in the next week and they get 30 micrograms and get admitted. And then they come in the third week and they go up to 68 micrograms, and that's the dose that they stay at. So depending on how they do, you can somewhat predict how you're going to manage them for the next week. For example, if a patient comes in and with the 20 microgram dose, they develop a significant rash, which is one of the most common side effects. So you have CRS and then you have dermatologic effects. They kind of are related, but we think of them a little bit differently. Many patients will have very minor CRS symptoms, but are miserably itchy. And so they will receive things like moisturizers, maybe topical steroids, oral antihistamines. When they go home, those effects can continue. But when they come in for the next dose, we want to be more aggressive. So we kind of learn how they do with the first dose, and then we're able to adjust that accordingly for the next dose. For example, we may increase their antihistamines by dose or by strength to minimize the effect next time, because as we're escalating the dose, the side effects can increase. What's interesting about how this drug is given, if somebody has a hard time during that dose escalation, let's say they have severe rash or itch and they're miserable at the 30 microgram dose, then the next time they come in, we could stay at that 30 microgram dose to give them another dose and see if we can minimize their effect. And then the next time they come in, they would then go up to the higher dose. And it's really just those first three doses that you see effects and they're admitted. So after the first 3 weeks, if they do well, they stay on the outpatient side because the risk of CRS decreases once their body gets used to it, essentially. The body's like, oh, I've seen this before. Patient has become kind of expert at what works for them, and the nursing team has identified what works for them. Some people may need more fluid, some people may need different antihistamines. So once you kind of learn what works for the patient, you're able to adjust accordingly. So for oncology nurses, it's ideal if the same nurse or nurses are taking care of the patient, because then you get to know how they do with their weekly treatments. And depending on resources at home, education, it's important that nurses kind of identify any barriers to care. Like if a patient is not able to reach their back and they don't have anybody at home, how do you apply moisturizers or topical steroids, those types of things? Nurses are really good at identifying those types of issues that may come up in working with family or working with caregivers.
Those are all really great points. Thank you so much for sharing that. And moving forward, what would you say is your key takeaways that you want nurses to know about this agent and its approval and your experience integrating it into clinical practice over the past year?
It's a relatively predictable treatment. It sounds like a big deal because the patients are getting admitted. There's this risk of CRS, and there is a lot that goes into it. But just like any patient who's having, say, a bone marrow transplant or CAR T, there's kind of a realm of what you can expect in standard algorithms that you generally follow based on an institution. Many patients will do well, and some patients won't do well. And at the first set of scans, they may not have a response. Other patients, if they have stable disease or responding disease, they will continue to receive this drug weekly indefinitely. But generally, by the time they're out of like the fourth or fifth dose,
You can sort of tell.
very minimal effects. And they come in, get their drug, which goes in over about 20 to 30 minutes, and then they can go home. So
Okay.
even though it's like a big deal sounding, it's with experienced nurses and with nurses that are able to proactively identify how to manage and tweak the regimens, patients can do extremely well. It's exciting.
Awesome. Yeah.
It's very exciting. Patients have done quite well with it. It does require a team to manage this, and it would require coordination with your inpatient team and your pharmacy because you do want to have medications on board. If a patient has a serious cytokine release, they can end up in the ICU. They can become very, very, very ill. So there has to be a lot of care coordination, but it is doable.
Yeah, great. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Vitals. Be sure to never miss a beat with Oncology Nursing News.